This episode of Tech News Briefing is sponsored by MSI, the award-winning laptop company that has all your work-from-home productivity needs covered. MSI has just launched a new lineup of laptops for a variety of user needs. To learn more, visit us.msi.com.
This is your Tech News Briefing for Wednesday, January 13th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. It's not often on the show that we dig into specific provisions of decades-old federal law, but Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act is an exception. The provision gives tech companies legal protection when it comes to moderating content on their platforms. Members of both political parties have long called for Section 230 to be reformed or even repealed, calls that have only gotten louder in recent days. And while many of the conversations about Section 230 center on social media companies, the law actually applies to a much wider swath of the internet, including some companies you might not think of, like Airbnb. On today's episode, our tech reporter Heather Somerville will help us dive into Airbnb's story and what it tells us about how changing the law could impact the tech world more broadly. That's after these headlines. New information on the Russia-linked SolarWinds hack. SolarWinds said hackers gained access to its systems as early as September 2019. That's about a month earlier than previously thought. And of course, we know what happened next. In March 2020, the hackers put malicious code into a SolarWinds software update that was then pushed out to corporate and government customers. The full reach of the cyber attack is still being investigated, but it's already being seen as one of the most sophisticated cyber intrusions to date. The ride-sharing giants Uber and Lyft are lobbying the incoming Biden administration for a role in the distribution of COVID-19 vaccines. Both companies have also talked to public health officials across the country about helping transport people to vaccination sites, according to people familiar with those discussions. Here's our reporter Sarah Krause on why they're so interested in getting involved.
Yeah, so there's a few different fronts to this. One is this reach out is, you know, we can help distribute vaccines and we're asking that you prioritize our drivers for shots, which could give the public more confidence in riding and in taking ride sharing to their vaccine appointments and elsewhere for that matter. And it could also, as they see it, sort of be a near-term funnel for business and a longer-term way to restart a business that has really severely been hit by pandemic-related restrictions, people not traveling as much, not going to restaurants, not going to see friends, all the reasons you might call an Uber or a Lyft, that the pool of opportunity there has gotten smaller.
By the way, it's not yet clear whether the companies will succeed in getting vaccination priority for their drivers. And Sarah says it'll probably vary from place to place.
Where we are with vaccine distribution right now is that states have very wide latitude to dole out doses at their discretion. So the federal government sets sort of recommendations, and then states and even local health authorities can further prioritize who gets doses first. And the group that we're really talking about at this stage is the essential worker. So that's everything from transit workers to grocery store workers to meatpacking industry workers. And the big question is, how will those workers be prioritized within different states? And the answer is that it's likely to look very different in different jurisdictions across the country.
Visa is abandoning its plan to acquire the fintech company Plaid after the Justice Department sued to block the deal last year. The DOJ had alleged that the acquisition would allow Visa to illegally maintain a monopoly in the online debit card market. Visa originally said it would fight the government. Yesterday, its chairman and CEO said he believed that they would have eventually won that legal battle, but that Visa had decided the case would take too long to play out. Instead, Visa will work with Plaid as an investor and partner. And General Motors is launching a new electric truck business focused on delivery services. It's the latest in the company's push to capitalize on the now booming market for e-commerce and home delivery. FedEx is expected to be the first customer. It's agreed to purchase 500 of the trucks when they're rolled out later this year. All right, coming up after the break, what Airbnb has to do with Section 230. That's next.
This podcast is sponsored by MSI, the award-winning laptop company that has all your work-from-home productivity needs covered. MSI has just launched a fresh new line of laptops for a variety of user needs with its Summit, Prestige, and Modern series. A CES 2021 Innovation Award honoree, the Summit is specially designed with today's business leaders in mind, offering the trifecta of security, stability, and performance. To learn more, visit us.msi.com.
In the past week, tech companies have taken unprecedented action to block President Trump's social media accounts and the alternative network Parler. That's revived calls by some lawmakers to review Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which gives these companies liability shields for how they moderate content. But Section 230 applies to far more than just social media companies, and any changes to it could have a similarly broad impact. Our tech reporter Heather Somerville says Airbnb is actually a pretty good case study of that, and she joins me now to explain. Hey, Heather, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, of course. Nice to be here.
So a quick refresher here. What does Section 230 actually do?
Section 230 is part of the Communications Decency Act, which was passed in 1996, just as, of course, the internet era was getting up and running. And it basically says that internet companies, internet platforms are not publishers and therefore are not responsible for everything that third parties post on their sites. It also says, importantly, that these platforms can take steps to remove content that they deem objectionable in some way.
And as we mentioned, lawmakers have been reviewing Section 230. Who's calling for what? And where did the conversation stand right now?
Yeah, the calls have come from both sides of the aisle and from both President-elect Biden as well as President Trump. Everybody wants to do something about Section 230. And it's really a reaction to the growth, the strength and the power of these tech platforms. Primarily, you know, Twitter and Facebook are usually the targets in these conversations. The reasons for wanting to change or outright repeal Section 230 differ depending on the political party. Republicans generally think the platforms do too much to suppress conservative views. Democrats are often talking about the proliferation of hate speech and misinformation on these platforms. But either way, there are more than two dozen bills that have been proposed by members of Congress. The Justice Department has weighed in on changes it wants to make, and a member of the Supreme Court has invited a case regarding Section 230 to have that deliberation at the Supreme Court.
And many of the examples you just cited center on social media companies, but Airbnb is another type of company that's been really impacted by Section 230. How does Section 230 even apply to them?
Yeah, the heated political discourse around Section 230 so often centers on what is actually a free speech issue. These matters of Section 230 protections and First Amendment rights often get mixed up in the reaction to all the political speech and hate speech that is getting circulated online. But Section 230 applies to a really broad set of internet companies that do many different things. In talking about Airbnb, Section 230 is important to protect the company from liability around what hosts, the people renting out their houses, post on the platform, as well as what guests, the people staying in these houses, post in terms of their reviews. And if you extrapolate this out, this sort of protection is important for all sorts of marketplaces, eBay, Amazon, Craigslist. So for all these sorts of marketplaces to be able to have two sides, the seller and the buyer, there has always been some reliance on Section 230 protections to not be caught up in a never-ending stream of lawsuits.
And zeroing in a little bit more on Airbnb, they actually have a bit of a legal history with this part of the law. Can you tell us what's been going on there?
Yeah, Airbnb has been quite litigious when it comes to Section 230. What that company sought to do was to claim it was protected because of this law from not just hosts and guests suing them for one reason or another, but from cities actually regulating them. Now, Airbnb is an interesting case because it is regulated most often by local governments, particularly in the United States. It's cities, it's counties that regulate housing matters. So Airbnb, since 2016, has filed seven lawsuits in federal court against cities and counties around the United States saying, hey, we're not following your home renting regulations. We're not abiding by these short-term rental ordinances because we have Section 230 protection. And in most cases, Airbnb lost that argument. This is really important because particularly in the case where Airbnb sued the city of Santa Monica, California, that case went to a appeals court. And that judge was very clear that in cases where there is an online transaction, in this case, somebody booking a vacation home, Section 230 does not protect the company from having to follow the local laws.
And we should note that Airbnb has said that the litigation it's had with cities in the past few years is not their normal course of business. And in most cases, they've been able to come to agreements about regulating listings on their platforms without going through the courts. Heather, you brought up some of those legal losses earlier. How have those lawsuits impacted Airbnb's business and the way they do business, even?
Airbnb has been fairly savvy in being able to navigate some of these legal losses and being able to create a framework where it can continue to do business and develop some sort of workable relationship with local governments. There was certainly an impact to Airbnb's business when the courts said in these several cases, Airbnb, you don't have Section 230 protection. You have to follow the local laws. For instance, in the city of San Francisco, the number of short-term rentals in Airbnb dropped by more than half shortly after a judge says, Airbnb, you have to follow the local laws. So that's obviously an impact to the business. But Airbnb, because it has tons of resources, it has a political operative in Chris Lehane, who is their head of public policy, it's been able to create certain frameworks and agreements with cities where Airbnb says, okay, we'll take some responsibility for what's posted on our website, but you regulators, you have to do some as well. And third parties, like the hosts and the guests, they're responsible as well. So we all have to work together to try to make sure that the homes that are posted on the website are actually legal. And many times this has been successful. Airbnb went public in December with a very successful IPO and was worth more than $100 billion. I think it's fair to say that it hasn't crippled the company.
So it really sounds like overall they've had to shift their business to rely less on protections from Section 230. Is that right?
That's correct. They've really had to shift their business model and their approach to working with cities to rely less on Section 230, since the courts made it clear it is not this sweeping immunity blanket that just because there is this law that says internet platforms aren't responsible for everything on their website doesn't mean it's a get out of jail free card when it comes to cities and counties and their regulation of local housing stock.
And so, you know, it sounds like we're heading towards a world in which Section 230 is not a sure bet anymore. You know, there are more and more challenges mounting to this part of the law. What does Airbnb's story tell us about what that could mean for tech companies more broadly?
Changes to Section 230, I think it's fair to say, are inevitable, given that both parties and all sorts of regulators want that to happen. What those changes look like is far from clear. We will have to see how the Biden administration navigates that. What I think Airbnb is an example of to other platforms, particularly those that are in the marketplace business where something's being sold by a third party and bought by another person, it's an example that these companies will have to invest more to create probably a tech solution where there is more filtering of who's posting what online, where there's more accountability. This requires more resources from these companies, where there's a different sort of dance that's done with regulators so everyone can come to an agreement. Also, what it could very well mean is more centralization. And what I mean by that is that a company like Amazon that has all sorts of sellers on it, if the company has to then take more steps to validate, investigate these sellers and make sure the products they are selling are not fraudulent or dangerous, then that favors the Amazon brand of products being sold versus, you know, some overseas vendor they know nothing about or some mom and pop retailer that they don't want to take the time or resources to investigate. And so that could be quite an interesting fallout from some changes to Section 230 that limit this liability shield.
Yeah, and much broader than social media companies. That's our reporter, Heather Somerville. Heather, thanks so much for joining me.
Hey, thanks so much, Amanda.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.